I am the committee secretary for the Multi-Party Women's Caucus. The chairperson is currently unavailable, Honorable Story Morutuwa. She's currently in Mozambique on the SADC parliamentary forum. In terms of the rules, in the absence of the chair, we are mandated to elect an acting chair. May I then have nominations for an acting chair? Honorable Memela. Can we use that?
Untabi Singh, because she's part of the structure and she's already been used now and then, so at least.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Honorable member?
Honorable Kuno, seconded.
Thank you very much. Do I have any other nominations? In the absence of any other nominations, I call on Honorable Kuno to take up the chair. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Can I start this meeting in a different way? Am I allowed? I wanted to ask honorable members to stand and have a moment of silence for those women and children who have been killed, raped, and as we are celebrating or as we are dealing with 16 days of activism, ask God to actually be with us and find a solution for South Africa. Just for 2 minutes or a minute. Thank you. Honorable members, this is the last year, the last day, or last meeting of the Multi-Party Women's Caucus for this year. And we are nearly at the end of the fifth parliament. And we'll soon take this baton to the sixth parliament. So as we do that, we should actually look at ourselves and say, what did we do right, and how do we make sure that it's taken to the sixth parliament, and all the weaknesses that we made during this term, we should also reflect on that so that it can be corrected. The fact that we have our women's caucus as part of the program of the National Assembly program of Parliament is one of the things that we fought for a lot of years, but it finally happened. So it is an achievement. It is an achievement that we also made sure that throughout our meetings we had civil society organizations, the NGOs and so on, which is good because we always say that this is the parliament for the people, by the people. So the more we have civil society organizations or anyone as South African coming here and saying, let us find solutions together, I think that's what we are striving for. And we are really glad, and I think it's an achievement. In other countries it doesn't happen at all. But we really pride ourselves to be South Africans and to be doing good. The issue of gender-based violence is one of the major areas of focus for the Multi-Party Women's Caucus, and as such regularly engage with critical government departments. So as we are engaging with them, we really need to get into the bottom of this and say there are lots of things that we have done as this government for 24 years. We really need to be looking at a solution that is sustainable for all of us. And we have to find a way of protecting our children. So, without waste of time, honorable members, you have a program in front of you. And firstly, I want to apologize for the chairperson of women, Multi-Party Women's Caucus. You have already said so. Just to reiterate on that, and I know that wherever she is in SADC, she's really representing us well as South Africa. And we'll keep on shining with people like her in this country. So we wish her well, and we hope that when she comes back, she will give us that report. And then we are now on the third item in the agenda, which is the briefing by Sonke Gender Justice on the state of South African fathers. Report. Sonke. Okay. Yeah. This is your chances.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, chairperson. I just want to, before I start, ask how long my presentation should be. Just so that I... You know, it's sometimes difficult to follow rules, but I want to try to stay into the rules. Thank you very much. So, I just want to say thank you for allowing us to come and present. We're feeling quite honorable to present to the Women's Caucus because we thought that Mr. Edward did something like father which affects women in many and in many ways, and that we should actually start a conversation to look at how do we deal with this conversation going forward in South Africa. Myself, my name is André Lavats, and my colleague here is Suleiman Henry, and we are working for Sonke Gender Justice. We are working in a unit called the Child Rights and Positive Parenting Unit, and we are basically working in South Africa, but we're also working in a number of other African countries. So before I officially start this presentation, I was just want to thank you for all the efforts that you as parliamentarians have made. Your contributions to child's rights as well as to strengthening families in South Africa. And I want to say that also, when you were saying that you want to engage more with civil society, I think most of the women here are very strongly rooted in civil society, and I must thank you because I think it's because of the women in this country that we have such a strong civil society movement, and I think it's because of women in this country that NGOs are so proactive and so involved. For many times, and I think for a long time, and for far too long, us as men have stand back and we were riding on the backs of women. And I want to personally, being a male, also apologize even for the role that I have unknowingly played in doing that. And I want to say that as colleagues, we want to recommit ourselves in ensuring that women's rights in South Africa are being respected and advanced, and that we make sure as men also that we play a meaningful role in ensuring that women and children are safe in society. So thank you very much for your efforts, and but also strengthening us and allowing us space to also contribute to the debate. My brief is actually to present on the state of South Africa's fathers. It's a report that was launched this year, and the report was launched after a number or series of reports that has been launched internationally. Sonke is working globally with an organization called Promundi United in the US, and we are basically the coordinators of Men Care Global, which is operating in more than 40 countries. And as part of the Mencare approach, we've launched basically a number of reports worldwide. And the State of South Africa's Fathers is actually a follow-up on the second State of the World's Fathers report. And the State of the World's Fathers report, and also research globally, have shows that if fathers are more positively involved in caregiving, there is better outcomes for children and women. If fathers are positively involved, of course, it contributes to children cognitively. There's better outcomes in terms of socio-emotional outcomes, but also academic outcomes. So basically, it's helping children to become more productive in life. It also shows that it makes a huge contribution if a father are more actively involved. It reduces the burden of care that is, I think, too much in South African society, but also worldwide. And I think that is where we're coming from with this report, is to see what is the strides that still needs to be made in terms of changing policies to ensure that women are protected, that we reduce gender-based violence, but that fathers actually play a more nurturing role. And I think one of the things is that what we're saying is that our objective as a civil society organization, but also as a global movement, is to advocate that men are doing 50% of the care work in society. And I want to say 50% because we are not, if you look at statistics, South Africa have already revealed that women are doing 8 times more of the care work, and those are the kind of things that we want to change. I normally say that we should not strive to do 50% of the work. We need to strive to do 100% of the work, because if women think about doing care work, they don't think about 50%. They think thinking about giving their everything, and that is what men should do. So I'm not going through all the slides. As you see, that this report is building up to the first ever State of the World's Fathers report that was launched in 2015. The second State of the World's Fathers report was launched last year, and we are currently working towards launching the third State of the World's Fathers report next year. This report, the State of South Africa's Fathers report, and the State of the World Fathers report, they have actually contributed to a number of policy changes worldwide. And some of these policy changes is amendments to paternity and parenting leave policies in 3 countries. And I must say that the work in South Africa that we are doing is quite groundbreaking. About 2 years ago, we developed a position paper on paternity leave. We've lobbied with Parliament in the amendment of the Labour Law Amendments Act. And I want to thank you for supporting some of these amendments. That position paper have also led to some discussions around fatherhood and father involvement or policies, parental leave policies in countries like the Netherlands and many other countries. And we cannot actually achieve those kind of work here in South Africa and globally if it was not for colleagues like you that are ensuring that we are having a safe and free environment whereby we can contribute as productive citizens. What we are hoping for with the State of South Africa's report this time around is to spark a debate around fatherhood in South Africa, to see how are we talking not only amongst men but amongst all sectors of society, to see how do we as men and as fathers contribute to much more positive outcomes for women and children, but also what is the policy changes that needs to make sure that we have an environment, that we have an open and free discussion, and that we do not simply just push for policies, but that we have a debate to say as civil society, we want to talk to legislators to talk about where are we taking the country in terms of family life. Some people sometimes ask why is fatherhood so important, and I think I've indicated some of the evidence, what it pointed out about the positive outcomes for women and children. But if we also look at the negative consequences, and I think being a father and a male, I must be honest say that I'm not proud of the track record that we as men have. If we look at the high levels of violence in society, if we look at the high levels of family violence. But what we're also saying is that it should start not with us. We need to contribute to make sure that we have a free and safe society, and that we need to work together with women and children to make sure that their ideals and that their safety are protected. Evidence shows that if children that grow up with absent fathers are most likely to be involved in gangsterism, most likely be involved in violence, and also suffer illnesses, suicide, and many, many other social problems. And what we're saying is that with a focus on fatherhood is how do we turn that around? If we look, for instance, chairperson, at the statistics, it shows that more than, say, about 53% of the total male population are fathers. So we're saying more than 50% are fathers, but we also understand that if we look at statistics, it shows a very bleak picture when it comes to father involvement. But we cannot turn these pictures if we are uninformed as civil society, as legislators, but we should actually look at what is the current picture telling us, and how do we move forward to turn that around. This is just a timeline about policy and fatherhood in South Africa. I will not go through the timeline. What we've done is that we've bring a few copies, and I'm very sorry that we did not bring enough copies because the civil society budget has been cut this year. So if we get more funding, we will increase the number of copies next year. But what we did was we uploaded a copy on our website, which can be downloadable for free. I think if we do this work, we need to look at the reality. And in the picture there, we see a grandmother. And in many cases in South Africa, we need to understand that the burden of care on women is so, so heavy. A lot of the time there's no father in the house. All the income of the women and grandmothers are basically being used to make sure that children are being cared for. So what we need to do is how do we look at those real examples, turn it around, and make sure that men are also playing a part to reducing their burden of care. So why is this type of work so important? We need to also look at what is the statistics around children's residency by household. And if we look at this a picture or this graph, it will give us an indication of children's residency in different types of households. It shows that if we look at the 70%, is that most of the children are resident in extended family members, which means that there's a broader family type that look and care for children and contribute to the care of children. If we look at the 20%, for instance, it's saying that statistics of South Africa is saying that 20% of children are staying with childhood couples. It shows that 7% of children are resident at lone parents, which is single parents, and 2% is composite. The next graph is talking about social fathering and the importance of social fathering in South Africa or in many countries. And I think as Africans, we have always believed in the broader concept of fatherhood. And we've always believed that fatherhood is not just biological. Fatherhood is also social. And in many cases where there is not fathers involved, there are other types of fathers, other types of male figures that are playing a meaningful role to contribute to the child's development. And here we're looking at children's co-residence in with biological fathers and other adult men. So if we say, for instance, and we've heard from Stats South Africa last year, that about 64% of children are not staying in the same household of fathers, which means that the overwhelming majority of children and fathers in this country are not staying in the same house as their fathers. It means also that those children are most likely to be subjected to poverty because some of those children will, or most of those children will only be exposed to the income of either the mother, biological mother, or being a grandmother. So we need to look at who is the other male figures can, because as I presented earlier on, is that when children are exposed to positive involvement, there's better development outcomes, in not only in terms of school development, but also lifelong life chances. So who is the other fathers or male figures that can play a meaningful role in those children's life? So it's said that 71% of children live with an adult man in the same household. So it's not that children are not being exposed to role models or to men. And I'm saying that also knowing that some of those men, a lot of those men are not involved. A lot of those men are also poor role models. So how do we structure services to ensure that there is support, that those men can be activated as productive, positive role models? As I indicated, 36% of children are living with their biological father in the same household. So 36, only just 36%. And I'm also saying that if we look at the 36%, a lot of those men are also not positive role models. They are not positively involved in the children's, because we need to understand the issue of patriarchy in society, how men are be viewing themselves as the head of the household and in many cases. So how do we transform those gender norms? How do we transform those patriarchal norms to make sure that those men understand what it means to be an active involved father? So as South Africa, we are not doing well when it comes to father involvement statistically. Many authors are saying that on the African continent, South Africa is the country with the second highest number of absent fathers. Namibia is currently the highest. So economically, this is a big threat for children, not for children only, but also for the economy of our country if children are not in households where they are better cared for. If we look at the issue of race, then this picture shows that the highest number of absent fathers in our country, okay, let me rather say, this speaks about co-residence, children's co-residence by race, and the statistic is from 2007, was released 2017 by Stats South Africa, and it shows that if we look at the colors there, it gives a division by in terms of race. It shows that most of the absent fathers are black African fathers, and then also colored fathers. I don't like the term colored, but I have to use the term, unfortunately. And then also that most of the present children are staying with white and Indian fathers. And if we understand the history of the country, we know that the issue around poverty, the issue on unemployment, we know the issue of migration and why fathers have to sometimes often leave their households to make sure that there is income in their families. So we need to also look now if we see this picture is still continuing, because there's an increase since 1992, basically, of absent fathers in South Africa. So economically, in terms of race groups, there has been shifts in terms of wealth distribution, but we understand also the level of inequality amongst racial groups is still increasing in our country. So that is also a threat for absent fathers. It's a threat for family life, because it means that if those patterns are going to increase, there will be most likely an increase of absent fatherhood in South Africa. So as a country, we will have to draft much better plans to ensure that we reverse that effects. The good news, besides the fact that the president has signed the amendment bill that looks at paternity leave, is that there is also good news that shows that children's residence by income creates a different picture. It shows that even in those households where the income is much stable, where the income is much higher, for instance, if I can make an example among black African families, it shows that co-residents are much higher. So the father is staying in the same household, and it shows that those children are exposed to a father figure in the same household. It shows, however, that where there is conditions of poverty in terms of black African, colored, or even white families, that co-residency is a problem. So father absence, there is a problem. So there is a bigger question, except looking at absent fatherhood, a question of how do we address the issue of poverty. If we can address the issue of poverty, it means there will be better outcomes for children and women. There will be more stability in terms of family life, and all the social issues like father absence and those kind of things that we are worried about will be a lesser problem. So that is just a question that I want to, or a statement that I want to leave there. I will not go into this slide. It shows basically that the first 1,000 days of a child's life is the utmost importance. It also demonstrates that a father's involvement in the first 1,000 days have a very good positive impact on a child's life. In the program where we're from, called the Man Care program, we say normally to parents that we educate, and parents that educate us, we're saying that father involvement doesn't start when the baby is born. A baby are not just being handed over to a father. Those first, even the 9 months of pregnancy is also important. It's there where women need more support, because if there's better support, there's less stress and there's less adverse effects on the unborn child. So we're saying that if my wife is pregnant, we should not say that my wife is pregnant. We should say that the couple is pregnant, so that the father understands that you are part of the pregnancy. You are not waiting for a delivery, because it's not about delivering just a parcel. There's been research done, however, on a small scale, and we want to look at that further around the use of child support grant. And it's been shown if fathers are actively involved, even if they get the child support grant, is that they are also making responsible decisions around caregiving. So the there's always this debate that fathers will spend money on tobacco or alcohol and liquor. The research have shown that those fathers actually do not spend, I won't say spend the money, but do not spend all the money on those things. So the issue around paternity leave and the debate around paternity leave that is saying that, oh, that is 3 days of men for men. It's also so in some of our own research that if men are being given leave and are being supported to take leave, they do play, or most of them do play, a positive role. I will not talk about the labor law amendments bill, because I think the colleagues here understand and are informed, but what I would say is that we are extremely happy to see that there's an increase in allocation for in terms of money to women that takes maternity leave. It will now be 66%. We are extremely happy to see that men are going to get 10 days leave, And 10 days, as we know, is not enough, but we know that we need to understand. We cannot say that I can only now 10, I must only take now 10 days, and if my 10 days is up, I leave the responsibility to women. It should be 50-50, but as a society, as a South African society, we still need to build some evidence in the test case to ensure that both parents get 50-50 leave, the same equal amount of leave, because if we give 50-50, there's greater chances for gender equality and gender equal parenting and more support for mothers from fathers. I will also not looking at the leave structure, so I think people are also informed about that. So my last slide basically is looking at policy implementation suggestions, and here what we're saying is that there should be mechanisms in place now since the bill has been signed to look at how do men use the leave. We should be looking at what is the support that is needed so that employers understand the importance of men taking leave, but also as civil society organizations, how do we provide support services such as positive parenting programs so that men understand the role much better. We need to look at expanding men's use of the child support grant in a positive and responsible way. We need to look at the linkage between the maintenance system and family plan for separated couples, and look to offer more options just as money, because fatherhood is not just providing money to the child, it's about caregiving and making sure that we are positively involved as men and as fathers. So what we also need to look at, improve health facility norms and standards to support men's involvement in maternal and infant health. So basically that is it, colleagues. But I would like to end off by saying, as Sonke, we would like to engage with you guys on regular platforms to see how do we work together to turn around the issues of patriarchy, of gender inequality, and how can we support colleagues that are in Parliament to make sure that we provide evidence for progressive law reform, but also as a civil society you also understand that the NGOs are under tremendous pressure. So how do we change issues not only around resource allocations, but also how do we really look at addressing and involving fathers and men in turning around the issue around gender-based violence in society. So I thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Now it's time for contributions. Any questions of clarity? Any input from members? I will start this side, and then number one, two, this side first. Are we done this side? Two. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I think I must start off by appreciating the presentation by Sonke Chada Justice. It is really eye-opening, and it reflects really the work that is being done, and it's much appreciated. I appreciate the fact that the Sonke Chada Justice is involved in ensuring that fathers play their role in the lives of their children. But I'm looking at the last picture that you have there of Bongani, which is a very, very good picture. But the narrative there is that sadly, after the photo shoot, Bongani is no longer with his family. And I don't know if, as Sonke Gender Justice, we should really be in support of, for lack of a better word, or of men or as fathers, or in support of families. Because the reason why it's easy for men to move from one family to the other is because of the lack of commitment. I'm saying they could do what they want to do even if they are married. But I'm just putting it out there to yourselves as a structure as to what kind of role can you play in ensuring that rather than individual fathers, you look at the unit itself. I was also looking at the issue of the involvement of the father. It is true scientifically, it has been proven that the contribution of a father figure in a family does go a long way. However, it also goes back to the kind of father that we're talking about. What kind of environment does the father create for their child to grow in? Because some fathers, with due apologies of course, some fathers may be there, but the kind of environment, spirit, the kind of environment that they provide there is really not what you need in a family, you know? And my question really is, how then? Because when you talk about gender issues, I really get impressed when we address manhood or men. Because when we speak amongst ourselves around gender, especially in this part of gender issues in our country, it doesn't help us, because in most cases, the perpetrators are men. So how do we ensure that we reach the ordinary men out there so that they get empowered as to how best they can create that environment? It comes naturally to others, but to others it's just not there. They are ignorant. They have to unlearn some of the things that they learned growing up. So how do we, as Songa Gender Justice, and probably with our assistance as well, reach out to those men and ensure that they get the necessary empowerment to transform their way of thinking? Thanks.
Thank you very much. I just want to start by, I'm just saying it differently from what the previous speaker said now, but I just want to ask you, though you are dealing with the aspect of the father figure in families, do you have by chance an area where you can investigate polygamous relationships as aspects that leads to uninvolvement of fathers? And then do you also have within your research, as I'm seeing it's done by HSRC, where you can do an investigation of how also extra marital relationships brings to the uninvolvement of fathers? And secondly, when you talk about gender issues, we're not only talking about male and female relationships. We have different types of relationships that are how do you involve other relationships and their involvement in parenting to see the successes and the problems, if ever they could be? Because I believe
we cannot just only talk from the perspective of male-female relationship. Not now. Not in this era. Not in 2018. And lastly, what I want to say is, even though the research is done by HSRC, do you go about, before you write your findings, to investigate the respondents from South African perspective, to check on whether, where are the respondents drawn from? Do you have an equal representative of urban, not only urban, semi-urban, urban, rural and rural, further involvement? Because my belief is we can draw findings, but the validity and reliability of your research can be proven differently if a person goes out to the rural and go and make the experiment to check on the father's involvement, and at the same time the high rate of abuse, to check on whether the uninvolvement of the fathers, why do women decide to stay single? Is the abuse of the fathers or the male figures not contributing also to the state of the situation as it is reflected in South Africa? Thank you.
Thank you. Can I have two more hands this side before they can respond, and then we'll take other hands after that? Number three. Number four. Three. Okay, this is one, two, three.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for being late. I wanted to appreciate the presentation. I mean, it's refreshing that men are taking up responsibility to fight patriarchy. We needed you for many years, I think. Yeah, it's good that you're coming on board, because the struggle is bigger than women. And then it is also bigger than all of us. It's a societal issue. But what I want you to address is the structural issue of a family. When the family was formed, it was formed on the basis that it has to oppress one person, which is the woman, you see. But using a male person to oppress that person, it's a structural issue. That when, even Hegel says it very clearly, how the family was formed, it's exactly how the state was formed. Then we want to destroy that pillar that oppresses that particular woman. Ne? So if you want to destroy it, it means basically you're destroying the system that oppresses the family. You see? And that system is bigger than you. You understand what I'm saying? So you're not only you're destroying a system that is holding a society at ransom, actually. They're holding society at ransom. And that system is capitalism. Because it made a woman a commodity, a property. So you need to re-educate the male folk to say that you don't have a commodity. You have a human being that has a feeling, that has a mind, that can stand up and talk. That is why we're having economic crisis all the time, because this half of the society, which is oppressed, it is unable to perform to its potential to lift up a society to take us out of poverty. Because under capitalism, poverty will never end. You see? So if you're destroying that system where you want to eradicate poverty, it means that you're dealing with something that is bigger than you. So you need these male folk that support you. So what you need to do is consciousness. Legislation is not going to help us. Legislation is just one element. But the bigger part is the mind. The mindset, because it generates itself out of generation and generation and generation. Oppression, we are oppressing ourselves without seeing the bigger picture all the time. So what I want us to develop is strategies that goes to educate as many people as possible. You must say in education, we must change the way, because education enforces that individualism, which is the capitalist mentality, that as long as I'm not affected, I cannot deal with that issue. You see? And taking history into consideration, that in South Africa, people were forced to dismantle families. And that, it put us into even a special frameworks that still divide us, you see? Even as families, people must move from rural areas to urban areas or whatever areas and then establish new families there. So we must also deal with the way we're going to remove the spatial framework of South Africa. It's not only capitalism, but we're also dealing with racial divide. So how do you organize white women, white men into your folk? Do they understand that you need them on the radar to help us to move this big animal? You must find a way of getting white males to come and talk about these patriarchal issues that are there, because violence also happened in their own communities and they are not talking about it. You see? So if we isolate them, so we're not building the nation that we wanted, because we want to build a new nation that is going to fight, because apartheid was very violent to all of us, white, black, and African. It was violent, but the violence was in different categories. So we must remove that violence together so that we can form a new society. So my brothers, and I'm saying the parenting thing comes, we will do it concurrently. We will parent, but at the same time, there's a bigger picture, the system that we must engage. So if we understand it in that way, that it is not only the parenting issue that has to take place, but it's also a system. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Perhaps also just to appreciate the presentation, but I would like to just add my voice. I see the starting point is that it's the state of the world's fathers, but then the focus is on South African fathers, and that actually got me thinking, because now I'm thinking of the real world, of the real South Africa where we live. The first thing that I'm just wondering about, the area of participation by South African fathers in parenting their children. It's very important that they participate, but I have this question of how do they participate. Now, in terms of presence or absence, that's what I actually refer to as being present but absent. You know, because sometimes you can say the father lives with the family 100%, but the absent part is that the father doesn't participate in anything, doesn't make a contribution, not just financial, but just as a parent into the parenting. And I saw something quite interesting where you say that where the research, let me say you, but the research says men receive the child support grant and they use it, they don't use it any differently. Well, my experience, I won't actually dispute that, but my experience is that very, very, very few fathers even are interested in the child support grant. It's only women who run up and down looking for a child support grant. And most of the time it is because of the men, of the fathers that are not making any contribution that women end up applying for these child support grants and they are the ones. So maybe just to check what really informs that. I don't have a problem. I'm quite happy that fathers will now have paternity leave. My only question again, I won't say my concern, my question again in my mind is, what are they going to be doing there? Not all of them, some of them. I mean, if you have not been there during the pregnancy, throughout the pregnancy, and then suddenly when the baby is born, you are there, you take leave from work. My question is, I wonder what they will be doing, those type of people, when now they get leave, whether they are going to now change just because the baby is born, or they are going to continue with what they have been doing all the time. So it's all these questions that really arise when you come to think of it. But we are all happy about the fact that they are going to get this opportunity. Now let me end the chat. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. We applaud the study done by Human Science Research Council and Sonke Justice. I've browsed the book very quick and it's talking about fathers. And I think these are more of adult males. And if you can see in our society, we've got more of teenage fathers. And are you going to do the study in that regard? Because the social ills that are being perpetrated by that sector. However, we really want to applaud you about this, and looking at the people who participated in this. Which I think that it should be in the libraries and we should really, the caucus, if we can take this to our communities so that they can be able to have access to this research. But Sonke Justice, if we can address the issues of waiting, if we can address the issues of prevention to both girls and boys, we cannot really find ourselves in this kind of this issues. Yes, children are a gift from God, but I don't think that if a child is a gift of God and then a person come and dump a child to me and then later on come to me and tell me that is a gift, that is totally irresponsible and is totally abusing me as an adult, because I also having my own time and I'm also having my own space. We should also address the gift of God. What is the gift of God, especially coming to children? And also addressing the issue of trying to make up
because most of us as parents, we like to make up. And we see that it is a teenage girl, a teenage boy, having children. It becomes really a stressful issue in us as parents. Let's go and address that issue, the gender justice, because you came with this outcome of your research, teenage pregnancy and the gift of God. I really want to thank you, but I'm saying, Chairperson, let's take this book so that people can be able to be aware of. And I like even what you wrote, what the study says about the effects, the positive effects of fatherhood in the first 100 days, 1,000 days. That is so brilliant. I thank you. I'm so emotional about this. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we get response?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to all members and guests present. Because the questions intersect each other, I will do a collective response, and wherever I miss, my learned colleague next to me will fill the gaps. I think in South Africa we have many challenges, and one of the good things is that an attempt to any solution should be preceded by research. And this document that we have in front of us is the first of its kind. I mean, at universities we are still very much depending on international academics and research and literature to fill these gaps, to come up with South African solutions. But this is really an opportunity for us to start looking at South African challenges and coming up with South African solutions. I think one of the positives is that a few years ago, I think in 2015, we also launched the State of Africa's Fathers Report. And we all know the impact that international migration is having on South Africa as well. So it's good that we also looking not only locally but also at regional fatherhood and issues related to fatherhood. So I also want to just sometimes step back and caution ourselves from demonizing absent fathers. When I came in this morning, I spoke to someone at reception who's working at Parliament, and he asked me, what am I coming to do? And I told him, basically. And he said, it's my brother. I'm sitting here from Limpopo, but if I'm not here, then my family don't eat. He's an absent father. He says the only way I speak to my children is on the phone. But it also means we need to unpack the question of absent fatherhood a bit more. What does it really mean when we say absent? Because we know that the statistics from Stats SA looks at who's in the home and who's not in the home, and that is their determination for what is absent and what is present. We know there's a number of factors that impact how fathers, let me say, behave. And those factors include things like education, the social construction of communities and of families, other norms, societal norms, laws as well. We still find laws, and this is a good attempt where we are looking at things like increasing paternity leave. Economic composition of our country. Some of us still need to go to a farm that's 200, 300 kilometers away from where I stay. I don't have a car, and in many instances I don't even have a phone. Some of us still have to go to mines that are in other provinces. And we know that economic activity is concentrated to the CBDs and those urban areas like our Cape Towns and our Gautengs and our Durbans, and it's really difficult to find employment outside of those areas. But in terms of what have we been doing and what can we do, I want to say that MenCare as a campaign has been active since 2011 in South Africa. We've been running fatherhood groups, we've been running parenting groups, we've also been working with young men because we understand that young men, or men, we need to look at men as boys, men as fathers, and then men as partners as well. So we've been looking at the holistic approach. Unfortunately, as we are aware in this chamber today, that we do have challenges with, or we are overwhelmed with sometimes with the problems, and our funding does not always allow us to reach out to all those communities who are in need. But we have been working in urban areas. We've been working. I've been to the deepest areas of the Eastern Cape, Port, I can't even remember all the ports. Port St. John's, and then further up, just on the border of KZN, Port Alfred, Port, and Port Shepstone. I've been to those places. I've been to areas of the Eastern Cape where people no longer speak IsiXhosa, where people are speaking Sesotho. So that's how far I've been. I've been to areas of Limpopo where the Vembe district that borders Zimbabwe. So we've been to areas deep in KZN as well, so we've tried to reach a variety of respondents in our work. But once again, going into those areas and having a workshop with men for 1 week does very little to really change their life environment. Because as soon as the parent comes home, especially the man, he arrives back home and he starts cleaning, and then the wife becomes suspicious, or the rest of the family becomes suspicious as to why all of a sudden are you doing this. Why do you want to give the kids a bath? Do you want to touch them? So those are some of the deeper things that we need to address also within our society. The member next to me had a very powerful contribution. But I sometimes want to caution us against and just being a bit looking more critically at the sources that we use in our education and in our analysis of things, because often we are dependent on Eurocentric sources for when we look at what the family is, how society is structured, and they look at, often it looks at a model that comes from Greek history and Greek academia or ancient Greek. And we sort of more than sometimes we need to look at our own history and how families are composed. The concept of the nuclear family or the nucleus family is something foreign to us as Africans. It's an un-African concept. My aunt would be my mother, my grandmother would be my mother, everyone in the family would basically be my mother. So we need to look at these systems that are attacking our ways, that are actually contributing, because we constantly are flooded with messages that say it's culture this and culture that, and culture is just the worst thing in the world. But we need to have a deeper look at some of these things. So what I want to, the example that I want to make is in Zulu and IsiXhosa, we use the word Nkosikazi. If we do a deeper analysis just of the word, so I'm not a linguist, but at the least is that I understand this one word And if I break it down, it means queen or lord or king of the house. So, in course, boom, 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 boom. Yeah. So those are some of the things that we need to do more research about, to find some more literature on ourselves, on our history, where we come from. Even if we look at the topic of corporal punishment, why are we beating them? If we go to the cradle of humankind and other areas, we find family life being portrayed in the caves, on the rocks. We find farming, we find hunting. We don't find beating there. There's no one with a whip. We find that the whip comes with the colonialists on the ships where they started beating the slaves, and those have been carried over to us, and now we are beating our children. So we need a deeper investigation. I need to say that often in civil society work, we are trapped in working with or within poorer communities, and we do not reach out enough to affluent communities, and especially where money is concentrated, and that would be with whites and Indians. We often don't get. Sometimes we reach them through institutions, because we've been working with social workers, we've been working with Department of Social Development, Correctional Services, Department of Health, but we have not had big success in working with white men. And I think one of the deeper issues is the polarized nature of our society. White people do not support struggles of black people. Black people do not want to support struggles of white people. Black people go into the media and call Indian people names, and colors go into the community and call whoever else names. So those are the things that we need to start looking at and addressing, that we are not enemies of each other. And if we are to build anything, we need to look at how we find joint solutions for all of us. And I almost repeated the speech of former President Thabo Mbeki of "I'm an African," but I will not go there this time. So I don't want to speak up everything, so I'll leave my colleague to cover some of the things. I just want to speak to the point of labor, or parental leave, and the child support grant. So, I mean, there's still questions around how will fathers spend money. But we also need to understand that those fathers who have applied for child support maintenance are really low. They are in the minority. I think the statistics point to about 2% of fathers who are single parents of children. So the number of fathers accessing those child support grant is really low. And those fathers, we can confidently say that those are the ones who have made a commitment to parent their children. We know that when the mother falls away, the grandmother takes over, the aunt takes over, another female figure takes over. It's very rare that you find fathers who are single parents. But those are the fathers that have really made a commitment. So hence, the statistics may not paint a complete picture of how fathers spend money in terms of childcare. What will fathers be doing on parental leave? I often make the example of when a mother has a C-section, a cesarean. So, and the comparison of a cesarean is for men and all of us who have never experienced it or may not. You are being stabbed in your stomach with a knife, and the knife is pulled, and now you need to heal from that wound. So for the first 10 days, you can't walk, you can't pick up your child, you cannot carry the baby, you cannot cook, you cannot even hold your baby like this to feed. So that is what I'll be doing, honorable members, in those first 10 days, which is still not enough. So prevention of teenage pregnancies, unfortunately our report does not go into detail of looking at or dividing the respondents in terms of age and other things. And one of the reasons is that whether I'm a teenage father or a very old father, the needs of the family remains the same. The needs of the child is still the same. And we want to make sure that father is able to provide to the needs of the family and not necessarily, but I do understand that we also need to make sure that we develop interventions that are able to cater for all the different areas of fathers, and I pray and my prayer is that we can work together with members of this house and other civil society organizations to really unpack some of these things. Our work with religious leaders are continuing. Because we do know that there are religious leaders who still hold very negative and patriarchal views to families and what the role of the father should be, what the role of the mother need to be, and how everyone needs to be subservient towards the king in the house, who's really not doing much but be there like a lion and send the woman to hunt and get food and care for the children, and all he just do is occasionally. I'll end there. I thank you for listening and for your audience. My colleague will cover the gaps. Thank you.
If you can, I know that you are discussing most important issues that we all want to hear. But let us look at time, otherwise we won't be able to deal with the rest of the agenda. Yeah. You wanted to summarize?
Just in short, around the research report on what is the evidence that is out there. We didn't do any new research. That is statistics that have been already collected and research that have already been done. But it also raised some questions of what is the gaps in terms of the research, and this is what the report does. You saw some of the recommendations, but there's also other recommendations in the report in terms of how do we close the gaps in terms of the evidence. The statistics that Stats South Africa collect around families, households and fathers, there is also some gaps and we need to engage in terms of what is the other additional questions that needs to be asked. There is evidence around rural and urban, and the evidence shows that rural are mostly affected because of the issues of migration, and father absence are much higher in the rural areas. Then also the issue around polygamous relationships, we couldn't find any evidence, but there is a need to look at doing more research around that. But there is also some evidence that people in this movement saw that extramarital relationships when a parent or a child are exposed to a lot of relationships, that it is harmful to the child, and there is negative outcomes related to that. But obviously I can't impact that. I think the other thing is also what we acknowledge, there is different family types. We need to look into different family types. The report, if you go into some of the areas of the report acknowledges that. The report talk about social fatherhood, which means we need to look at different types of fathers, teenage fathers. We need to look at grandfathers. We need to look at fathers in same-sex relationships. Women in same-sex relationships, because as a society we are quite diverse. I would like to also say, as the organization in Sonke, we know we are not perfect. We also know that we need to improve, but what we've started with about a few years back is that we give our staff 30 days of paternity leave. And with the 30 days of paternity leave, fathers are involved in care. And there's also some of the arguments outside to say that, oh, people are now getting extra leave, they are going to make more children because that is what they're good at. Our staff members did not make more children, so maybe we can't afford it. Anyway, but in conclusion, yeah. Okay.
You are the last, number three. And you'll come as a follow-up later. Okay. Number one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Mine is very brief. I get your movement for change and would like to see some gender transformation. Now, my question is, but before I pose it, we now are having a new generation of children without fathers. Previously, as you have said, it's the mines, poverty, etc., etc. We've got these children who have their fathers from outside. Forgetting IDs, I know a lot of them from Port St. John's, Bizana, the Siki Siki. They go and get married at home affairs, and then the moment they get IDs, they disappear. And then those are the children that are going to be fatherless. Now, my question is, would rather prevent a lot of that happening. These are happening because of ignorance and poverty. Have you engaged with the Department of Basic Education so that we can structure a situation whereby our children are educated about having children before they are able to manage themselves? Because if a child is educated at an early age and be warned and told that you don't have to have a child before ABC. So this is why I'm saying, have you engaged with DBE so that this can be penetrated, what you are doing, to all schools? Because if children are educated at an earlier age, they'll be able to take care of themselves and know very well that maybe I won't have a child before I get married, and then the father will be there or something like that, though there's no guarantee in any event. Also, at universities, there are a lot of students that are adults and then they're making children. Besides doing research at universities, are you engaging with them so that they can be able to get the students to understand the importance of fatherhood, what it means to be a father? Because this is the generation now that is going to start having, when I see from your analysis, is from age of 18 to 59. Now, those who are at high school and at university, I think there should be more focus there because they are going to be the fathers of tomorrow. The elder ones, they've already messed. It's unfortunate. So it's too late, but at least let's get the best out of this new generation. Engagement of DBE, engagement of university students. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much for the two presentations, but I'll make a request, Chair, and understand me, my request will be based on the fact that I'm still living in the old school of thought. I still believe in a paper, you know. For basically the two presentations, the first one, the today's one, because I believe it's quite a huge document. Today it was just an abstract for the sake of presenting. It will be good if you can get that copy. But what even interested me most is the research that you talked about, the one on the state of South African fathers. I think it will, if we go through that report, it can even respond to so many questions that we have, as we are still going to be raising up them to you. But I believe once one gets an opportunity to research, we can even be more enlightened. So if, Chair, you can organize those two documents for us, I think it can assist us most. But I had one question for today. My question is on the research as such, when it comes to the issue of paternity leave, as to say, does it take into context the realities of our country? We are living in the country, culturally we are diverse and so forth. I'm not sure who was
conducting the research. But the fact of the matter, I come from a family where my father has got 10 wives. We're talking of paternity leave. My father is a working man. A 30 days paternity leave. In no way that I see any company allowing my father to have 30 by 10 paternity leaves. And at the same time, my father is expected to take care. So I mean to say, looking at such a situation, is what we are celebrating, of which we are really celebrating, is a good step. It's towards a good direction, but is it taking into context some of the diversities that we are faced with as a country? What impact is that going to have in the production, economic development? You know, what is it? Have you ever thought of such and moving forward? That is why I say maybe looking at the whole report, those are the things that we can get to understand and even have more insight on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Che. The presentation is highly appreciated, and I think it's good for us to have discussions of this nature so that we begin to share ideas. This thing was raised earlier, that there are things that can't be legislated. There are things that you cannot legislate. The mindset, some things have to do with the mindset, and some things have to do with socialization, the way we were socialized. So I think it's important to understand how, as the presenter was saying, that they go to deep rural areas to understand how they conduct these workshops when they get there. You know, do they listen to the people, or do they tell the people what they think should be happening? And also the issue of integration. How is their training integrated with other trainings that are taking place? Because from experience I know that if you empower one group in a society, you have not done anything. As he was saying, you'll empower men to do household chores. And when they come back to do that, we are like, yeah, who tell go, who fun go to msebenzi wam, once again, don't, ikhona lento, and yamsebenza. So I think it's important for both sides, men and women, to be empowered. Because if you empower women, only women, and you don't empower men are not, don't have in their minds any tactics of dealing with an empowered woman. You'll empower me, I go back home, my husband is not empowered, and I'll hit this brick wall. I'll go back home and hit a brick wall. So it's important to see how we can integrate the work that we are doing. We don't do it in silos, men in their corner, women in their corner, but you empower both groups, and there is a space that's created for women to understand that when my husband comes home and wants to wash dishes and wants to change the nappy, it's not a trans mesh, it's a good thing. So I think it's important for us to be engaged in such interactions so that we begin to understand each other, because we have been socialized in a certain way. So to debrief ourselves is not going to be something that's going to happen tomorrow. It's a process. Thank you, Chair.
Mama, you are the last.
Thanks very much for joining us again and having a discussion. I might sound controversial, but it's a fact. How are you going to deal with the men, irrespective of age, who have never been responsible, and they have so many kids? What is their reaction with all your workshops as Sisonke? Are they coming out? Are they actually saying yes or where?
we have kids that we haven't even seen how they look, and what's the plan for the future.
Very much. Oh, Gwen, so thank you. I think what we also need to address is the increment of the maintenance. It is too little. It doesn't equate the responsibility that these women must endure throughout the month. I think we must fight for an increment. I don't know what percentage do they draw when they want a maintenance to be given 200 rand a month from a person who earns a lot of money, you see. So that is one thing that we must fight together, yourselves and us, so that these women are able to at least remove the burden. And then the other issue, I understand the issue of the societal evolution is the same from Europe here in Africa, is the same. But the nice thing about Africa is that it held the matriarchal law of negation, still holding on to that, you see. So we can use that to bring back the other cultures together to help us move forward. And in the process, there are also cultural issues that are harmful, which we will not need because of oppression. We will not need them when we move forward. And that we must also engage with yourselves. And then I also want you to work with the Gender Commission when they do their dialogues and all that, and the Women's Ministry, so that you can enhance what you do, because you were also established by them, you see, as a men sector. So you should not leave them behind. So don't do your workshops without them, so that we can have, we can enhance our work together. Thank you very much.
Just to add on the education of young generation.
Because they might not have time to come to the workshop.
Let's engage them on social media. Put the topic on social media and engage them. And then you can then be able to educate them around these issues, both young women and men. Because if you would want them in your meeting, you won't get them. And they are very busy. Our children, they are very busy. At what they do, no one knows, but they are very busy. You won't find them anywhere. But they can talk to you on the gadgets. Let's get even the few, establish a network of young people within yourselves and follow them, follow their issues around, and now engage them on topics and so that we can even close the gap between the ages themselves. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I also had a question on this slide, children's residency by household. It's not clear. If I would suggest that we make photocopies to every member of parliament to get this, because I think it's an important thing that we should all engage in what you and the research that you have made. If we give them that, because they were not part of this meeting, they won't know exactly how to interpret this, and it's very important so that we understand the core, what were you saying, fighting sense and all that we have in our community. Sonke, I think you are doing a good job, but your voice is not heard. Your voice is not heard when we have rape cases or murder cases in courts, because it will make a difference if a man stands up and say, no to this. We cannot allow this to happen. Even though we know, we all saying that you are innocent until proven guilty. But if you don't hear the voice of a man, they'll keep on doing it. Because we come in as women, talk about all these things outside courts, but I think if you can come, we'll be happy about it. But your influence, I know that you have spoken about young boys or the youth.
you know, but charity begins at home. When you are still young, what is your contribution towards boys? You know, as you're doing these workshops from one region to the other, how do you then inculcate this? Because if we don't start with the boys at school, by the time, and we wait for them to be fathers or teenagers, by the time they are teenagers, they have this concept that a girl is, you know, of patriarchal, they have that already in their minds that we should play with girls, this is what we do to girls, and, you know, I cannot be punished for doing this. That's why they even beat their teachers at school. So I'm saying, as you're doing those workshops, try to find a way of reaching out to those boys. The same way that, we, you know, even at preschool, you find a teacher telling small girls that if you find your uncle or your father playing with your private parts, you should go and talk to somebody. And it has gone all over. I know that it's disadvantageous to men because now they cannot play with their children, real men. But again, it's helping our young girls. So if that same, the education that you're talking about, if it can be taken to boys at that age, I think 15 years to come or 20 years to come, we won't be talking about the things that are happening right now. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the questions, Chairperson and members. And I'm listening to these questions, and some of it is good questions, not some of it, all the questions are good questions. And it raises issues of we are a society that are in conflict with ourselves, we are in trouble, we need change. And it's saying, and I must also say up front, I don't have all the answers. And I'm sure as you're sitting here, you're sitting in the same boat, you don't have all the answers. And if you had all the answers, I'm sure some of you wouldn't be here, because then we wouldn't not be necessary, wouldn't do the work that we're trying to do. But I'm going to attempt to answer some of the questions. And I also think, Chairperson, this calls for more conversations in the future. But not only more conversations is that what is, and I think the Women's Caucus is very central in this conversations, because women are mostly affected when it comes to gender-based violence, when it comes to the absence of fathers, when it comes to the killing of children, and so on. Yeah, even water scarcity, everything affects women mostly. So when we have such conversations in the future, that we also look at how do we move forward together to advocate for a plan to take South Africa forward to address many of the things that we concern. Currently, there is a national fatherhood strategy that is sitting with the Department of Social Development, but the strategy is old. Yeah, there is at least a strategy. But the strategy only look at the nuclear family system. The strategy also only look at capacitating NGOs to work with fathers. So it's old and outdated. I think what this report highlights and the questions that all of you highlight is how are we going to deal with the issues that families are facing, that women are facing, and how can men play a role to address these things? And I think we can call and we need to call for a review of these strategies so that it addresses all of the questions that that the members are asking here. Yes, it's true, we're sitting with a new generation of children without fathers. And that is not only the children that do not have birth certificates, but there is many, many other incidences where the children doesn't have fathers. And we need to look at what is the strategy to deal with these children. What we've done, for instance, in and a member was asking about Department of Basic Education and Universities. In Uganda, for instance, we've trained educators to work with children on positive parenting programs. Those children were as young as 10, 11, 12 years old. And we were so surprised when we went back and we engaged with the children, and the educators were training the children, and the children were saying, the boys and the girls were saying, the boys were saying that, you know, we thought cleaning classes was for girls and those type of caring work is for girls. But now this education helped us. We no longer wait for girls to clean. We now also take the broom. We sweep the classes. One of the boys were, for instance, saying, and I didn't say that was necessary, is he was locking up his sisters and mother in one room and he was trying to cook and prepare food. Because after the education, he wanted to give something back. And the parents were so surprised when they saw what these boys saw. The community leaders were seeing that the boys, because in Uganda, it is women's responsibility to work in the garden. Men doesn't work in the garden planting flowers. And those boys were planting flowers in the community, and the community leaders were saying, wow, this is wonderful news. One of the leaders were giving them a goat. Another boy got some shoes, and they were so proud after this. So they also need to be incentives for some of these boys. Some of the girls were saying they went back, they educated their parents, because the parents were still, like the other member was saying, the mothers were still believing that the boys shouldn't be doing this. So we saw after educating the children, there is transformation, not only in the house, in school. There was transformation in the family system, but there was also transformation in the communities. So we should do that. The children of the country is our future, and we need to invest as much as possible to them. Yes, we are engaging the Department of Basic Education. We have done some work with boys, Mama, because I also heard that Mama is concerned about the young boys in our country. So we educated boys on comprehensive sexuality education, issues around gender equality, sexual reproductive health and rights, and we saw some good results on gender norms transformation, and that some of the research that we've done after the intervention shows that those boys now had more respect for women and the rights of women. Some of these boys, for instance, mentioned that if they saw other boys that were part of the program that discriminated against some of the females, they went to say, listen, men care. Remember, men care. And I think that is an indication if you take boys through gender transformative programs, they are more, they are in a position to keep other boys accountable for violence against women, but also violence amongst themselves. Sadly, our funding ended, and currently we do not get any funding from the South African government to continue some of the work. The problem in government, and sorry for saying that, is that government starts supporting good programs, and they say, we're piloting, and as soon as the pilot is done, we do some research, we show some evidence, then the pilot disappears, the money stops, and we cannot continue. We need to look at how do we create good models and how do we sustain good models. So I think going forward for next year, let us educate or let us advocate where there's good models on what is those good models that can take this country forward and how can we as a collective support those good models. Yes, men and women should be empowered, and I think we've dealt with that one. Mama was saying, how do we do with men that doesn't change, regardless of age? And I think it comes from deep concern that there is something that needs to be done. What I can say is that we need to try. We don't have all the results now, but we must not stop trying. And we need women to ask these critical questions so that men can wake up, so that men can understand what is their responsibility. If we do not get these critics, we will never be able to understand what is it that needs to do. I have walked the journey of gender transformation. I'm more involved now, but I am not perfect. And I need my wife and I need yourselves to keep me accountable, to say, listen, this is wrong. And I appreciate that. So we need to ask more of these questions. So I'm almost done. We are working with the Gender Commission when needed. In fact, some of the commissioners were employed by Sonke in the past. And I think that is what created a very good relationship. We have people like Mbuselo Bota that is very passionate about the work, and he have really done excellent work, and we continue working with him. We are very close with him as well. Yeah, so I think I want to keep it there. I'm not sure if I've answered everything, but at least I tried. But my plea is just that we should continue working together. We are now, as Sonke, next year we are going to pilot a two-year program. It's funding that came from the United States. The United States, and everyone's going to think about Donald Trump. It's the UK. And that is to pilot a parenting program for fathers in two provinces. We chose the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape because of the different situations in terms of economics and rural and urban provinces. And what we would like to do there is to focus to integrate women's economic empowerment in fatherhood interventions, so that fathers become playing a more meaningful role with the empowerment, especially the economic empowerment of women. We have an element in there that we would like to engage policymakers, and we are hoping that some of the members will be part of the discussions and the debates. So that we can, how we structure this and create a model so that we should make sure that we create the environment where women's rights and the economic rights of women are being realized. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. As you can see, all of us here, every time in South Africa, we have what you call constituency offices, and would want to partner with you when you do those trainings or talk to men. And if you can give us your email address so that we can interact with you and make sure that you come into our constituencies and we can do this job together. I agree this is a work in progress. Like Honorable Tom has said there, that is, we cannot achieve all this overnight. It's quite a journey, and we should all be part of that journey. Thank you so much. I hope that you'll give us your email address so that we can interact with you and invite you in our constituencies. Honorable members, we're supposed to have number four on the agenda, but the Minister of Women is not available. She's out of the country, so... And because of that, we had to ask Social Development to also come and address us on this South African Integrated Program of Action Addressing Violence Against Women and Children. But we've not heard from her, but we're hoping that we will get a presentation and we'll send it to members. So I wanted to apologize on that. We tried to call her office and even her office, yeah. And there was nobody who has responded. So we're taking that off. But again, on the last item, members, we have adoption of the legacy report of the Joint Multi-Party Women's Caucus. If you can see, I hope that all members had this document. You got this document. Let it be our homework for Christmas or for the holidays. And when we come back next year, we want to make sure that all the good things that we have done in this term, they can be taken into the next term and look at our weaknesses as well. All those things that we could not implement, look at that and see, find a way of dealing with that so that when they, as we're preparing for the sixth parliament, we'll be able to say we have walked our road and there's no step that we didn't take at all. So thank you so much for your attendance and thank you so much for always coming to meetings and actually telling us the wrong things that we are doing as a steering committee of multi-party women's caucus and also empowering us together. We can achieve more.
Madam.
Thank you very much. I just thought that maybe we would get to a chance where we mention some of our weaknesses. Because I just would like to mention only two weaknesses of the minutes that we don't have and the minutes that we don't receive. The minutes, very important, because we don't report on where we are, the continuity and sustainability of the committee, very important. And secondly, if the minutes are not there, we are given an instruction to say we were supposed to go somewhere to investigate on the possible decriminalization of sex work, and it wasn't done, so we can't just work on a vacuum without any references to what we do.
No, Chair, I think the member is very right. But I thought you were saying that the report, let's take it back, and when we meet next year, those are the things that we must include, that in this meeting we need the minutes of the previous meeting so that we know where we come from. You are very right, but I thought you have responded to that. Let's bring them in the next minute so that it must be part of the report, that it will become a legacy for those that will be taking over next year.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope that members understand that we won't do justice if we're saying let us deal with these minutes, because we'll be rushing through them, the legacy report. We'll be rushing through it, and what we want to achieve won't be achieved at all in this meeting. So that's why it's our homework. As we're sitting with our children during holidays, we'll also have time to go through this. And when we come back, the first meeting, when we come back, we'll deal with this legacy report. And all the weaknesses will be there, and then we'll find solutions together. So, honorable members, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. May God be with us always. Let's not forget to be with our children. Give them love and support, and I know that most of us will be going out there to campaign. This is our time to campaign for next year's elections. As we are doing that, let's not forget that we have responsibilities at home. We need to take care of those children. Thank you so much. Akule ilinele maAfrika. Ralebuha.
Thank you.